Valley 104.9 goes behind the scenes with former King County Councilperson Kathy Lambert every Tuesday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 6 p.m. as part of Valley 104.9's Community Talk and Info Sundays.
Thank you for joining me tonight, Kathy Lambert with Behind the Scenes with Kathy Lambert. And tonight we're going to talk about the fact that there is an election before us in the Valley. And I know a lot of people have been very surprised when they've gotten their ballots saying, I didn't even know there was an election. There's not a person on the ballot. There is a program on the ballot. And so however you choose to vote is up to you, of course. But I wanted to just give you some details, but even more to show you what kinds of things to look for when you get your pamphlet. So the pamphlet looked a little different this time because it had a cover over it. So you needed to make sure that you saw that. And then there's one proposition, and therefore it's called proposition number one, and it's a regional automated fingerprint identification system. So if you take all the first letters, it's APHIS. APHIS has been around for a very long time. It is a separate service of the county, and it is run by some people who I have always found to be very prudent. In fact, in their last 6-year levy, they were so prudent with what they were doing that they said, we can make this last another year. So the 6-year levy, they ended up making into a 7th-year levy. And so essentially, we as citizens got the benefit of their prudence in making sure that they used all of our money wisely, which is very impressive to me. Then as you look in, there is a explanatory statement that tells you what this is, and then the opportunity for a statement in favor and opposition. No one filed in an opposition. So we're going to talk about that. And that usually tells you very good things that nobody was opposed to this going forward. So one of the things you want to look at, is this a replacement levy or a new levy? So a replacement levy is one that the amount of time from the original levy has come to pass, and now they want to redo it. So you would look at the amount of that levy that you're currently paying and then subtract that out and look at what the new amount is. And interestingly enough, the new levy that they're asking for in the first year is actually a few cents less than what they were at the other time. So they look out over the horizon of the levy, and this horizon will be 6 years, to say, what am I going to need? So first of all, what is this? This is a system where they can use fingerprints to identify who the person is. But over the last few years, they have been able to upgrade the technology and to add palm prints also. So at the scene of a crime, when they take information, then they are able to run it through APHIS to see, does this fingerprint or this palm print now match Johnny or Susie or whoever? And they can also do that on the road when they look at arresting somebody. And you'll be surprised to know, that some people play the game with the legal system, and they will say, for instance, you know, my name's Kathy, but if I say my name is Susie and I get arrested and I get booked in as Susie, 3 weeks later, I get booked in for another crime and I say my name is Betty. And a month later, I get booked in for another crime and I say my name is Julie. So that was happening. And when this new system was able to start many years ago to interface, they found out that there were many people that were being arrested under multiple names. So when the judge would look at, oh, this is Julie's first time to be arrested, but now that we found out that Julie and Betty and Susie and Kathy are all the same person, yeah, we need to look at what's going on here and a very different pattern of what this person's criminal aptitude is. So that was quite startling to all of us when we found out, I'm talking over a decade ago, that this had been an issue. And, you know, now when, and then when I say now, I mean still within the last decade or so, so not like yesterday, they were able to say at booking, well, you're telling me you're Betty, but actually I know that you're Kathy. And therefore, you know, you've lied to us at booking. So it's important to know whom we have and how often we have them in the jail. And so this replacement levy would take over, and it would begin at a rate of 2.75 cents per $1,000 of your assessed value. So in the explanation statement, they do talk about what would that be if your home's assessed value was $885,000. If that was your assessed value, then it would be $24.34 a year. If your home obviously is more than that, let's just for example say that it was double that, your house is around $1.6 million, then it would be a little over $48 a year. So that gives the courts and the jail system more ability to be sure who we have and make sure that they are sentenced appropriately. The other thing that happens is that supposing in the year 1970, Bobby committed a murder, but Bobby had never been arrested before. So there were no fingerprints for him in the system. And then he went ahead and led a pretty clean life. And that was what we call an unsolved case, cold case. So they used to all just go into a file and, you know, pretty much not have much activity on. But now they can take out these cold cases and run the fingerprints through and see if over the years that Bobby has now committed another crime. And then it will pop up and say, oh, go look at the cold case that Bobby actually committed a murder. So when they find cold cases, and they do find cold cases, there have been years where there's been a detective that really focused on that. And then during budget cuts, not so much, but they do try to churn the cold cases so that they can see if there are any new people that have come into the system that they can then identify, yes, this is the one that did this crime or that crime in the past. So I know that there have been times when they have found, you know, very old cold cases that were very serious, serious crimes, and that people were very pleased that they were able then to go to the family of the person that in the cases that I'm thinking of was deceased and let them know that we now know who murdered your loved one. And not that we ever want to go through that, but to know that we have helped some other family to get closure, I think is really important. So then the next page talks about the statement in favor, and there is one council member and the sheriff who have written the statement in favor. And so that gives you an idea of who is the people. There's usually three people, that up to three people, that can do statements in favor, and the same in statements of opposition. And you don't have to be, you know, a famous rock star to get to be able to do this on any of the propositions or any of the things that are in the ballot. If you are, say you're a nuclear scientist and you have an expertise in the topic that is up for a vote, you can call in and say, I would like to be one of the three people that writes a statement in favor or against, and you know, this is my expertise, and so that you can put your name in to have that opportunity. And I have done that on one occasion, and it was very nice because that was a way where people knew, oh, she has strong feelings about that. And as I went around, people would say to me, well, I saw your name on this, explain this to me. And so that was a great opening to be able to give information to people. So you can look at who are the people. And if you know those people, you can say, oh, well, I usually agree with that person, or I never agree with that person, or almost never. So that gives you a little bit more of a background in what you can decide on as you read these things. So those are the people in favor. Obviously, nobody is against it. And in here, it does talk about how the technology has changed. And as we have seen at the federal level, there are technologies that they have found in retirement system that was back to the 1950s. They found other places that were back to the 1970s. And there are places in the county or have been that had very old technology. And especially when you're talking about a changing technology, like fingerprints and now palm prints, you want to make sure that those are very up-to-date pieces of equipment. And the people who are running this department, as I said, have been very prudent about making sure that they do top quality work. So one of the questions people say is, well, why doesn't this just come out of the base? Well, that's always a good question, why it doesn't just come out of the base. But if it's in the base, then it can be changed in how much money goes in and out of it as each budget comes up over the 6 years. So there'd be three opportunities for elected officials to come in and pluck money out. So this is a separate account, and that money is in their account. And as you saw from the last time, they were able to stretch it another year, which was quite impressive. So, I was asked by an county employee when I was working for the county, are there any computer systems that you are completely concerned about? Obviously, we're always concerned about technology and keeping it up to date and not crash and not being able to have somebody come in and do things that we don't want the computer system. But there was a computer, and this was probably 6 or 7 years ago, that there was a computer in the day reporting center. And it was a Commodore 64, and it had a very small capacity. And they had worked around how to deal with this in a way that was mind-boggling, archaic. And but they had no other option. And so when this new computer employee came to me, I said, you need to go look at the Commodore 64 at day reporting. And at first he told me later, I kind of laughed when you said that we were still using a Commodore 64 in, the year like 2020, maybe 2018, but way past Commodore 64. But he did go over there and he saw that, in fact, I was accurate that it was a Commodore 64. And so he changed it out and was able then to make things much more efficient over there. So sometimes not everybody even knows that those kind of little things are happening. The same gentleman asked me, was there another one? And I said, yes, it was a contract that we had with the city of Seattle that we were spending $1 million a year on. And I told him what my concerns were on that program. And he, again, when he called me back, said, well, you're two for two, Amber. And I'm like, well, that's always nice. So that one was also had some pretty awful stuff that we were spending $1 million a year on. So he actually pulled the contract and brought it in-house. And our county employees ended up doing the work for a lot less than $1 million. So it's really important that we do not let our computer systems get out of, out of efficiency. And when you're talking about something that is archaic, and many of you that are listening are probably younger than a 1950s, computer system, like at the federal level. So, important to do that, to look at what they say about what they have done with making sure that it is up to date. And then it goes into the text of the ordinance. So the ordinance is all laid out for you. And so a lot of people say, oh my gosh, this is so much reading. I'm not sure, I want to read all this. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to pick out some of the facts and help run you through it. I am not telling you how to vote or not to vote on this or for this. I'm just pointing out the history and what has happened, the costs, and then you make your decisions what you want to do. So it's required that you put the full text of the ordinance, and then there's a section on page, I think it's three, that, That's a statement of facts. So one of the things that they say is statement of fact, which is important. So you're going to look at how long has this been going on and what has it accomplished. So it started in 1986 by a vote of the people and has been voted on since then. And it holds 2 million fingerprint records and then over 1 million palm print records. Now, remember that palm print was a new updated part to this. And then approximately 63,000 crime scene prints from unsolved cases. Again, that's called the cold cases. So there's a lot of data in this. And they were teasing me one day because I don't really have very good fingerprints. And they told me that I've obviously had too much paper in my life that has worn it off. And I said, oh, yes, I've been a school teacher and an elected official, and I've had mountains of paper. And they said, well, we can tell, which I thought was very funny. So it took them a while to be able to get my fingerprints. And so I now have beautiful fingerprint records as a former elected official and former teacher, having my fingerprints taken for each of those. So now the system is used for two major things. One, as we mentioned, to identify arrested individuals and to prevent the wrongful release of those people who have indeed used false names. And they do that to avoid the fact that they know there's an arrest warrant for them and they don't want to go back to jail. So they just give a different name. Or let's correct that and say they used to give a foreign name to them. So the second thing is that they can search the fingerprints and palm prints to identify unknown suspects. And so they, if the person says, I'm not going to give you my name, well, take their fingerprints and all of a sudden it comes up, oh, you're Betty and you've committed crimes here and there and you're wanted on warrants in several places or whatever, the data comes up. So those are the two main things. Then it goes through when it was reauthorized, as each time that the 4 years or 6 years, 5 years time limit that they had set for that particular levy expired, and then it again. So the rest of that page is just reiterating all of that. It also talks about the big update in 1999, and then when they replaced the new system in 2011, and that was quite amazing. We did a lot of computer work about that time, and I've seen people make comments about, well, how long it took. And if you knew how archaic things were prior, we had 6 computers in the budget office that did not talk to each other. And so trying to get all 6 of them to talk to each other, we had departments that had different rules. We had different things, like one computer system would say Lambert Kathy, and the next one would say Kathy Lambert. And so they didn't directly go. So you had to write a little programish to be able to say, okay, well, it's field 1 here, field 2 here, and in this program it's field 4. So we had to come up with some standards so that all the information could be put into the same format. And then in the HR department, there were so many different codes that streamlining as many codes as possible. And then the sheriff department codes were different from other people's codes. And so it was a lot of work. And it took a little bit longer because as we would get into different computers, we would find out that, in fact, there were other glitches or things that needed to be fixed. But through working on that, I learned quite a bit. And then later on, when my bank was going through a similar thing and they had their banking computers down, and I called the bank to say, like, how long is this going to be down? What is going on? And I ended up talking to the lady who was the director of the department. She was telling me what she was doing. And I went, you know what? I know how to fix that. And she's like, what? So anyway, I was able to share with the bank what we had learned at the county. And she said, That is so helpful. So we really got into the nitty-gritty of trying to make all this work and to understand. So that was quite the accomplishment in 2011. So it talks about that. Oh, it's 2018. It also then was upgraded again. And so keeping, as we do in our homes, just trying to keep our computers working properly so that we don't get hacked and all of that is really important. So lots of good work was done. The lady who spearheaded that, Carolyn Whalen, was probably one of the most patient people I've ever seen because as new things showed up, she took them all in stride and would call a meeting and we would all hear the newest adventure of the week or day, depending. So anyway, this computer system has been taken and updated and they do a very good job. So in the data that was from 2023, they say that almost 51,000 electronically submitted fingerprint records and identified over 200 individuals who had given false names when they were arrested. So when that first started, and we, knew that there was going to be a small percentage, but we had no idea that the percentage of people doing that was quite so high. So that was a huge revelation, actually. And so that does not happen anymore because if you get caught doing that, then that is noted when it goes to the judge, as well as putting your records under all those different names and aliases. And so that's really important. The APHIS department also had over 3,000 requests for crime scene assistance, which is a lot. And they also, some of those requests come from other places in the area, in the state. The program also processed over 1,500 pieces of evidence and identified well over 5,000 crime scene prints. I actually got to go to where the records and the evidence is kept. And you know how you go into something and you say, I think this is going to look like X. And then you come out and you go, oh my gosh, that was like X to the 20th degree. And that's how I felt when I went to see where all the evidence was stored. The sheer volume, number one, the security, number two, I think it was close to like getting into Fort Knox. And also the categorization of how all these things are, put together and so that they can be found. And it's quite amazing. So being able to search all these records and be able to identify is really important. And then right, the smaller handheld so the officers can identify somebody at a traffic stop. Because we don't have very many officers per 1,000 in citizens, having tools to help the officers is so important. And one of the tools is that they have a handheld mobile identification device. So if you give me a driver's license that says you're Susie and your fingerprints say you're Jeannie, then right there they know that there's a problem. And so that has also been very helpful. So then this agency has been recognized for awards because of their exceptional standards and service. And they are a regional model that has really been an asset since they started in 1988. So that is very impressive. So then it talks about all of the various things that they do. And one of them is everything that you would expect. They purchase, they maintain, they train, they support for 55 live scans, which are fingerprinting devices that we just talked about. And that all of that, obviously, just like if it were at your home, if you have, to take your computer and keep it update, costs money. And then they take and train the examiners and technicians who collect the prints from the crime scenes, and they process the items for evidence chemically. They preserve those prints photographically, and they search them in APHIS to make all the identifications that we've talked about and do a continual search as new records come in. So that is a lot of work when you're talking about the volume. Now, they are proposing a new levy that would go from 2026 to 2032. And the proposed levy would keep the current services with a first year levy rate that's actually lower. It would be the 20.75 cents per thousand of assessed value. We all must remember that it is our responsibility to be an informed voter. And in order to do that, as I started to say, you really need to know people who either do the research that you agree with, ask questions, to, you know, get on lists that you believe are giving you perspectives that you may not get on other lists, so that you can compare. You don't have to agree with everybody 100% of the time, but you do need to know the pros and the cons so that you can weigh them yourself. I was recently watching a television program, and I watched it, and then I switched to another national radio station, TV station, to hear their report, and I was aghast. It was worse than I expected. The things that they said had happened didn't really happen the way they said they did. And so my husband and I talked about the idea that if I were only listening to this station over here, the national one, that I would have a very different perspective than what I heard from my own ears. And heaven forbid, we need to be taking the time to really listen with our own ears, not by what, you know, the different medias have shaped us to think are happening, but what did you hear? And I really don't like it after I've watched a speech or something, and then the TV people come on and they say, well, this is what was said and this was what was said. It was like, I just listened to that. So you don't need to tell me what I just heard. And then when they tell me things that I quote heard, and I'm thinking, that was not what they said, or that was taken out of context, or that's not who said that. And, you know, even in my own life, Seattle Times misquoted me so many times. And I told you about Politico one time saying I said something. And when I called the reporter the next day to say, how did you get that? She said, oh, I wrote the quote before I called you. And I'm like, well, isn't that interesting? So, you know, you have to know that some of the things that we hear, some of the things that we read, aren't actually correct. So getting on tvw.org, listening to the debate, you can do that at 10 o'clock at night. You can do that at midnight. You can do that in your car as you're driving from place to place. So you hear it yourself. And I will tell you that some of the Senate debates lately, including from our own senator in our area, have been pretty shocking. And so you hear it yourself and you go, whoa. And that is so much more powerful than if Susie or Sally or Tommy or Mike tell it to you, because then you have a passion. My representative said X. What in the world were they thinking? And I'm not saying that every single time that an elected official says something, you have to agree with them. But you at least need to think about, where are they coming from? Do I agree with this principle or not? And the one that is most absurd right now that's going through the legislature is Senate Bill 5181, which pretty much guts parental rights. And for anybody who is a parent or a grandparent, that's not okay. And we have people in our area that are supporting that. And, you know, coming off very pompous about, well, it has to be this and it has to be that because there's some bad parents. And, you know, you need to be informed enough to say there already is a system to deal with parents that are bad. You don't assume parents are bad. You assume parents are good parents and loving. And then that those parents or those neighbors that see that there's somebody not being a good parent, that then they will have the ability to call in and bring down that system to deal with a parent that is being abusive, whatever. But the assumption is sort of backwards. And as you listen to yourself, then you will have your own passion. Senator X said this that was in your mind not okay, or Senator Y said this that you didn't like. When you hear those things, then it impassions you to then talk to your neighbor and say, did you know that I listened to this last night and I heard this? What is going on here? And, you know, right now there's a lot of debates in Olympia with what the governor is saying and what the Senate Democrats are saying. Now, we're talking about both Democrats, so I'm not bashing the Democrats. But I will tell you that the things that the governor is saying, he's accurate on some of these things. While I don't agree with some of the expenditures that he's making, I totally agree with the fact that we have got to stop taxing on things that are new and maybe unnecessary, unlike what we were talking about earlier, which is a necessary service. Let's put the money into those services and not into some of these. And so, you know, if you are a Democrat, you have a Democrat governor saying one thing and you have the Senate saying the opposite. And so it gives opportunities for all of us to say, you know, it's not about party here. It's about principle. It's about ideas. And I will tell you, having worked with Bob Ferguson before he was governor, he is a great budget writer. And I worked with him on a number of budgets, and he was fair. He was honest. He was thoughtful. So, you know, because I've worked with him and seen that while I don't always agree with every policy, I do agree with his principles on coming forth in the bipartisan budgets that we wrote as council members. So I know that I'm going to be listening to him a little bit more carefully, because I believe that that is his premise and that he's not tax. And I do know that other people writing the budget are more predestined that way. And now they have a governor saying, no, that's not going to work. And so we're in the midst of an internal situation where there's part of the group that wants more taxes and significantly new taxes, especially on some of the proposals for property tax increases that would be tied to inflation. Oh, my goodness. You know, there's no way that it's going to be making our homes more affordable, for sure. So on one hand, they're saying more affordable. And on the other, they're saying we're going to tie potentially your property taxes to inflation. Now, none of this is in cement yet. This is all until the budget is passed at the state level, which will be before April 27th. So there is time for you to get in and say to the governor, I support you, or to the budget writers in the Senate and the House, but the Senate's been the lead. No, we don't agree with this. And we don't want you to do these special programs. We want the money to go to the priorities. And, you know, listen to both parties, not parties because it's all Democrats, but to both entities, whether the governor's talking about it or whether the Senate's talking about it. You know, they are debating in a nonpartisan way because they're the both same party. So I think it's exciting that it's the same party so that you can be talking about the principles rather than the party. And if we would get back to the principles, that we would be in much better shape. And as I've told you before, I served in the legislature when it was 49-49, 49 Republicans, 49 Democrats. And we had rules of engagement and we had great conversations. We made good decisions because we had to have the others agreeing with us in order to move forward. And so we had to have these really informative discussions to say, what facts are you using? What facts are you using? Because very frequently, the Democrats would get their briefing book that was based on research out of University X. Republicans would get their briefing book based on research out of University Z or a think tank or whomever. But it was rare for us to get together until that year and say, okay, well, you've got this report and it was written with this background and we've got this report. So let's, you know, figure out what did they agree on? What did they not agree on? Well, this is an important part that those two think tanks didn't agree on. Let's have staff go and check someplace else. So we really got to the nitty gritty of working together, not on, okay, I win, you lose, or I lose, you win, but what are the facts? And a fact is something that can be proven. It's not that I believe it, so that makes it a fact, or you believe it, it makes a fact. It's what does the research show? And we did an awesome job of being able to do that when we were 49-49. And On the council, when we were 5-4, we also did that, and it was very productive. And so I want to just suggest that whether you're Republican or Democrat, it is not a party matter on this budget. It is a fiscal matter, and we should all be concerned that we don't get taxed out of our houses. Are these really necessary, even though they're liked ideas? Who are these contracts going to? At the county level, I will tell you there were many contracts that I had great concerns with. And I would call people in and say, I want data. Well, council member, we really can't give you data on that one. What do you mean you can't give me data on that one? So, there was lots of things going on that were identified. I sometimes felt like a little doge even before there was doge, because I was looking at data and results or no results and saying, why aren't there results? So it is time that all of us say, I don't care whether you're on the right or the left. Let's just clean this up. Let's just find out where the money's going and who's getting the money that's giving it to this person, who's giving it to that person. So it's going around here. Who's getting paid over here with a contract over there that they may not actually be doing anything. And, Stacey Abrams, at the federal level, there's an accusation of her getting $4 million that may not have been appropriate. We don't know yet. But the fact that it's been identified, okay, now whether you're Republican or Democrat, what were the outcomes on that contract? Did that contract actually happen the way it was supposed to? And, let's make it so that everybody that is on the margin of doing something that is not in the best interest of the community, whatever that municipality is, jurisdiction, that we all examine and then adjust. And where there have been criminal issues, well, then we deal with that. But if it's not criminal and it's just not appropriate, then we need to, as a community, need to say it's not appropriate. So let me give you an example that happened to me 2 months ago. I went to a meeting. And I found out that one of the people in the city is on a board that benefits from the decision being made. So I said to the city attorney, I happen to know that. So where would anybody else sitting in that room know that piece of information? Because as far as I'm concerned, that is material information that should be put on the record. And the council should agree that this person not be the one making the information, or that they recuse themselves, or that it's just put on the record so people know that there was some bias in that decision because of their other roles. And the attorney said, "Well, we don't do that here at the city. We don't discuss our other outside potential conflicts." And I'm like, "Well, why not? If I were in that position and I were the mayor or I were the council member, I would be saying to that person, don't you think you need to put on the record that you have a role that the average person sitting in this audience or listening to our tape doesn't know? And it's material. So they should at least know it. Then you can say to your elected officials, I know that this employee is on that board too, and we don't think that's a good idea. Or we think it's a lovely idea. But regardless of whether you think it's a good idea or a bad idea, you should know and then make the decision. But you shouldn't be recused from even having the opportunity to know because nobody tells you. And the idea that it's not the policy to do that, I'm like, well, that's not a good idea in my mind. But, that is what's happening, and it's happening city, county, state, federal levels. And it's time that we are not afraid of asking questions, looking at what the money is going for. Is it really happening the way it's supposed to? And being more informed voters and making a decision that is prudent for your philosophy. Whatever your philosophy is, just be an educated person for your viewpoint and be able to explain it. There is so much going on that is half truths, quarter truths, sort of truths. And again, I have people who have contacted me for years and said, can I get a list? of how you were voting and why, so that I feel like I am more informed because I've heard your viewpoint, and then they can find somebody else's viewpoint. Some of those people, you know, will be happy with what I had to say because they've known me for years and know that my ideas, I research them. I know some background. I know what's supposed to be. I can check the law, the RCW. And so I work hard at being informed voter, as well as when I was in the legislature, to make decisions that I thought were the best decisions I could possibly make. And I was not always the person that, I know there are some groups in legislative bodies that if you belong to this party, you vote this way. And if you are here, you vote this way. I did my own research too, to be sure that the things that I was hearing were things that I thought were accurate. So it's on all of us to be good citizens. So I hope that the information that you've heard tonight about this ballot for APHIS was helpful on how to evaluate any proposition and to make it more streamlined for you as you now look through the voter's pamphlet. And your vote should be in by April the 22nd. And I really hope that whatever your view is, that you will vote, because we need to stand together as citizens to make sure that our communities are what we want them to be, and where we have strong values, like we'd like to have a safe community and our children well educated, and the very values that we can all share and be good community together. So with that, I hope it's helpful, and I will see you again soon, next week, on Valley 104.9. Thank you.
Kathy will be back next week with another new episode of Behind the Scenes, right here on Valley 104.9 Northwest Eclectic.